This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. How often do you think about your soap? Well, if you answered, not much, maybe you should. You see, a lot of what passes for soap in stores is technically not soap, according to the FDA's definition. It's full of lab-created chemicals and detergents because, well, it's cheaper to make. Now, what if you could buy natural soap made from natural ingredients like tallow, palm oil, coconut oil, and scented with essential oils, and for just a little more than you'd pay for grocery store soap? Sterling soap is 100% natural, and with a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne, there's a product and a scent for just about everybody. Check them out for yourself at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
Could 1925 be one of the greatest years in football history? Well, it absolutely is. We've been celebrating 1925 all week long here on Pigskin Dispatch, the YouTube channel, the podcast, and everything on the website on pigskindispatch.com. And 1925, you know, we have covered a lot of Red Grange, we're going to talk about him in just a moment. We've talked about, you know, his end of his college career, the start of his professional career, saving the NFL, the barnstorming tour. We talked about the Pottsville Maroons and the lost championship here. But there are so many other great facets and stories from 1925 that are just historic. In any other year, they would be top billing for this. And the year kicked off with one of the greatest Rose Bowl matchups of all time. You ended up having the iconic Notre Dame team under Newt Rockne as their head coach that featured the four horsemen backfield that was, you know, one of the greatest backfields ever put together. The seven mules up front blocking for them, and just the, you know, the tactician of the Midwest in Rockne, and, you know, playing at the top of Notre Dame's game. This is the pinnacle of the golden age of football in 1925 with them. And then he's facing a legendary coach at Stanford, where you had Pop Warner, after great success coaching the Carlisle Indians in the 1910s and teens, and then going on to coach the Pitt Panthers and taking them to great glory and great heights, and then moving out west and taking over the Stanford program that featured a running back named Ernie Nevers. For if it wasn't for Red Grange playing in 1925's college football season, probably, you know, Ernie Nevers would probably be the top billing, because this guy was just fantastic through 1924. I'm sorry, 1924 season for Ernie Nevers. You know, we're playing the 1925 Rose Bowl on January 1st. Well, that iconic Rose Bowl game ended up coming down to a great victory for Notre Dame, you know, as they played to a 27-10 victory, largely sealed by one of the four horsemen, Elmer Layden, who, you know, while the quarter, you know, Layden and Harry Strudreyer and Don Miller and Jim Crowley have become national celebrities, it was Layden that delivered the performance of a lifetime in Pasadena. Layden wasn't just there for a threat on offense. He was a defensive terror also. He exploited Stanford's miscues by returning two separate interceptions for touchdowns, immediately changing momentum of the contest. And Layden scored a third touchdown on a run on offense, finishing day with three scores that directly contributed 18 of Notre Dame's 27 points in that 27-10 victory. Now, Ernie Nevers had entered into that game a little bit banged up, had some ankle injuries where they weren't sure if he was going to play, but he did play, and you know, actually played quite well. But Notre Dame's defense sort of kept him out of the end zone and marked a bowl bid for Newt Rockne and his Warriors out there on the West Coast in Pasadena. Now, you ended up having, you know, Dartmouth's perfect run, undisputed powerhouse of 1925. Dartmouth was led by All-American halfback Andy Oberlander, and the Big Green went 8-0, outscoring opponents 340-29, and they were awarded the Contemporary Dixon System national title. Of course, you know, we head back into the timeline, and, you know, we had some tremendous items happening after the Rose Bowl. September 13th, the Green Bay Packers broke in their new stadium, City Stadium, with a dominant 48-6 non-league victory over the Iron Mountain All-Stars per Packers.com. Now, they played many games there at City Stadium until finally they moved into the home that we now call Lambeau Field, named after their coach and founder at the time, Curly Lambeau. Speaking of Green Bay, in 1925, on September 27th, they had their first victory over their rival, the Chicago Bears. It was a pretty good game there, but Chicago had not been beaten by Green Bay in the first few years of that rivalry. November 7th, another rivalry came up as Michigan was upset by Northwestern by the score of, get this, a baseball score, 3-2, another brilliant game of defense played by those two college teams. And Illinois defeated Ohio State 14-9 on November 21st. Final game for Red Grange, because on November 26th, just days after that final game, it was Thanksgiving Day on the 26th, Red Grange made his highly anticipated NFL debut as a halfback for the Chicago Bears against the Chicago Cardinals at the famous, legendary Wrigley Field. We have quite a bit on that already this week that we've talked about. December 6, 1925, the Pottsville Maroons took over first place in the National Football League when they were asked by then NFL president Joe Carr to play the other team that was up on top of the National League Football League standings, the Chicago Cardinals. They ended up playing at Comiskey Park in Chicago. The Pottsville Maroons traveled, and they traveled well. 21-7 was the final score. You can check out more of that detail in our book, Marooned, that we wrote with Jeffrey Payne just last year on the 100th anniversary of the Pottsville Maroons, and we've talked about that a lot. Speaking of the Maroons, on December 12th, they were the top NFL team, yes, and they played the team that was the top college team, the reigning champions of college football, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. It was an all-star team, though. They were all graduated then. The entire Four Horsemen backfield was there. Most of the Seven Mules were there. Plus, they added some all-stars from other teams just to fill in the gaps to get their 11 on the field. But it was a late field goal by Pottsville to take a 9-7 victory in that game at Scheib Park in Philadelphia. But that was a key where they played in Philadelphia, because that was the territory of another NFL franchise who wasn't very happy that Pottsville was playing the Notre Dame All-Stars there in their territory. The Frankfurt Yellow Jackets ended up protesting, ended up talking to Joe Carr before the game. Joe Carr asked Pottsville allegedly not to play there in Philadelphia. They did anyway. They ended up getting disenfranchised and were not awarded the championship for that year. Later in early 1926, that championship was asked to be given to the Chicago Cardinals, who they declined taking it. Their owner did, because they had some naughty things going on at the end of 1925 also, playing a couple games at the end to try to have a better record than Pottsville. And the rosters of the teams they were playing weren't filled with NFL players. They end up having to sprinkle them in with a couple amateur players, and some of these guys were from high school. So it's kind of a shaky start there for them. The tremendous games that were played there, the suspension of, the Pottsville Maroons happened there at halftime on December 12th. And, they ruled just days later that they would not be eligible for the championship, as the season ended on December 20th. And the curse was passed down to the Chicago Cardinals because of all of that. Pottsville, remember, had beaten them, and they did not get a championship that they wanted until 1947 for the Cardinals. But it seems to be carrying on now for almost 100 years, as the Cardinals are not reaching the pinnacle of NFL success. So Red Grange going pro was the big news, but like we said, we've had multiple entries on that this week for both podcasts and on YouTube channel, Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel, and pigskindispatch.com for all your great articles on there. Make sure you can follow all of this in our timeline. That's where we're celebrating each week a new year because we're bringing you our timeline on pigskindispatch.com. You can go by day, and by the end of summer, you know, August 31st, we will have all 365 days of the year, a normal year, in there with all the football history, all the college and pro football Hall of Fame birthdays on each of those days. But you can also go by year. We are building it up and adding a year each day here going through the summer. So at the end of, you know, August, we will have every year up through 2026. And it's dynamic. We're going to keep adding to it as we learn new significant dates in football history. And as new dates come up, we will be adding those as well. So some modern, news come hitting the wires is going to get added in there, as well as some historic news as we learn from our friends and our network of great historians and reading some of these great books and old newspapers and yada yada. We'll find those dates. And from you too, if you have any dates that you see are not on our timeline that you suggest be added, we'd love to hear from you. pigskindispatch@gmail.com. You can find us all over the internet. We're our social media at Pigskin Dispatch on Facebook, Twitter, X, whatever it's called now. And like we said, YouTube is where we really hang our hats on and live in there, and this podcast world that you're listening to now. So till next time, everybody, we're going to be having next week, getting into another great year of football history, 1936. We're going to have some great guests on to talk about 1936. We're going to talk about the history, some YouTube channels, some YouTube shorts, and some great stuff coming at you with some podcasts and articles. Check it out, pigskindispatch.com, and all of the other great media outlets for Pigskin Dispatch. Till next time, everybody, I'm Darren Hayes. Have a great Gridiron Day.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network, and we're able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know that. Can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.